So we have one more presenter before we are going to break for lunch, and she is going to come up and give us a 2018 legislative update. Katie Fass is the executive director of the Oregonians for Food and Shelter, which is a coalition that promotes the responsible use of pesticides, fertilizers, and biotechnology. Previously, she served as vice president of public policy for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation and director of government affairs for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Please help me welcome my friend Katie.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm going to try my best not to give you indigestion before lunch as we're talking about the Oregon legislature. Let's see. But we do have the February session starting on February 5th. It's going to go for about 35 days. That's the constitutional limit for the short session. So it'll be ending early March. You know, the positive thing about not only the time length of the legislative session in February is also that there's very limited scope of what they're going to be dealing with. Committees are limited on the number of bills they can introduce. House committees are limited to 5. Senate bill committees can only introduce 3 bills. And House members can only introduce 2 bills each. And Senate members limited to 1 bill. So really hoping that the scope is really focused on what can be accomplished in 35 days and not a lot of the fringe crazy stuff we see in the longer session. But we have some major legislative shakeups going on right now in Oregon, probably the most I've ever seen in terms of people resigning to take other jobs. We have a potential that when we get into February, we could have 9 new legislators, or at least legislators in new positions. Representative Ann Leiniger has moved to the Clackamas County Clerk or Court and has been replaced by a former Oregon Environmental Council lobbyist, Andrea Salinas. Representative John Huffman has resigned to lead USDA's Rural Economic Development as an appointment there. And just recently was that seat was filled by Daniel Bonham, who's a small business owner out of the Dalles. Representative Mark Johnson has resigned to become the new CEO of the new Oregon Business Association, OBI. And just last week, Jeff Helrich was replaced. Jeff is out of Hood River and is a retired Portland police officer. Ted Ferrioli, who was the long-term Republican leader in the Senate, has resigned to become part of the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. That is kind of 2 positions that need to be filled now. One is who will be the legislative seat for Eastern Oregon. His legislative seat is bigger than some states, so several counties will be making that decision. Representative Bentz right now, I would say, is the front runner for that appointment, but that process hasn't started yet. And Jackie Winters just recently was elected to become the new Republican caucus leader. And if you aren't familiar, Jackie is a long-term legislator out of the Salem area. Senator Richard Devlin has also resigned to be part of the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. He is from Clackamas, Washington County area. Greg McPherson, which some of you might know, has ties to Linn County Farm, a former legislator. He is vying for that appointment, but it is a very contested appointment in the metropolitan area, decision made later this month. But also the issue with Senator Devlin is he's been the long-term co-chair of Ways and Means. So dealing with the budget, crafting the budget of the state, we do not yet know who will receive that appointment. It is being vied very heavily and very competitive amongst many Senate Democrats. So Betsy Johnson's vying for that, along with some others. We've also heard rumors that Peter Courtney might just appoint himself as co-chair, but I don't think we'll see that announcement made till later in the month. Representative Jody Hack, who represents part of Salem, is going to be resigning to become the new CEO of the Home Builders Association. That appointment will be a Marion County-based appointment and will happen sometime before the February session starts. If Representative Cliff Bentz gets the Senate appointment, there'll be a process to have a new legislator in January, coming into February from Eastern Oregon. And finally, kind of in the green, hard to see, is Jeff Cruz, which I've never seen before, has had a complaint filed against him, and there will be a conduct committee that will meet the first week of session. So not only will we have the normal chaos of session, but we may have a conduct committee that will make a recommendation to expel him from the Senate, which is something that I don't know if we've seen, at least in a short term in several decades, happen, or if ever in the Oregon legislature, which would mean if that happens during session, the governor would make that appointment. So not only do we have a lot of policy issues that we'll be talking about, but this is a big shakeup when you have this much change going into 35 days, and you have legislators who haven't yet set up an office, don't have contacts with their constituents, don't know the process, and mainly all Republicans. I would say this is also going to have a big impact on 2019 and the 2019 elections, when you're looking at Mark Johnson out of the Hood River area. That is going to become one of the hottest races, I would say, in the House for control, or supermajority control in the House in 2019. So what are the big issues? Looking outside of natural resource, I would say there's three big issues going in to the February session that they'll be tackling. The big one being one that you all will decide in January. If you're not aware, we will have a tax vote out to voters in January around, it's ballot measure 101, and it's how the state's going to pay for our Medicare obligations. The legislature last year put a 1.5 tax on healthcare premiums to pay for Medicare, raised roughly around $300 million. That was then a signature effort to refer that to the voters, went forward, and collected in a very short time period the required number of signatures to place that on the ballot. So you all will have a choice on where that tax measure falls. Yes would maintain it, no would repeal it. And that will happen right before the February session. If that tax measure goes down, then we will have a big discussion in the legislature on how we're going to pay for these Medicare obligations that the state has put forward. I would say I don't believe that the legislature is going to change how we're paying for Medicare, or who we're covering through the Medicare system. And instead, we'll be looking at what systems are we going to cut, where are we going to raise revenue to help make that obligation. The other right now, I think you're probably aware, on the federal side, we're having a big discussion around the federal tax policy. And the House and the Senate have both passed their bills for tax reform that will be going to conference committee soon. Oregon connects or disconnects with certain federal tax policies. So either this legislative session or in 19, they are going to be having to have some large discussions on how we are going to respond to the Trump tax plan. So I see a big discussion in revenue around connecting, and what provisions we're going to connect to and what provisions we may disconnect to. And then the other that I would say is sucking all the air out of the room is around climate change. Several senators and House members on the Environment Committee have proposed a cap and invest program that would cap what your carbon emissions are for certain industries. And also, if you're above that or you are a polluter, you would have to be paying fees, additional fees, that then would be invested in other programs. They have been meeting for several months now with advisory committees on certain topics. There's an agriculture and natural resource committee that's been meeting. We have not seen what the language and specifics of the bill are. I don't think we will see those till mid-January. I fear this is an area where we're starting to see a divide on where different agricultural groups will go, and one that there needs to be a lot of work in terms of the agriculture community on the positions that we could take. Several industries are going to be offered certain incentives and programs that they can participate for financial benefit, but called offsets. But on the other hand, there is large implications for energy costs and energy use that would impact your fuel, your electricity, your irrigation rates. So I would predict that this does not pass in 18. I don't think in any way the legislature should be tackling issues this big in 35 days, but this is a setup for more discussion in 19, and it's one that the agricultural community needs to be heavily engaged in. Specific to ag issues this session, I would say, right now we will not get the bills till January. I'm not hearing a whole lot in terms of pesticides, biotech, but I expect that we'll see the bills we've seen in the past to amend preemption, potentially ones around chlorpyrifos, neonics. But the big ones that we're aware of are a bill to expand no-pay or slow-pay no-pay to include all seed, not just limited to certain grass seed varieties and clover. And additionally, an allowance. I hope you're all aware that the legislature banned use of cell phones while you're driving. Do not do that. But that also went to when you're moving equipment down the road. And so there'll be a legislation to allow cell phone use when implements of husbandry. So when you're driving, you can talk on your cell phone, you can still use a CB, which are all currently banned. And also on the federal level, there's a lot of discussion around electronic logging devices. This does not apply to farmers operating on F endorsements or F plates, but for commercial drivers, that they have to do electronic logs for tracking their hours and their mileage. There's a discussion on getting an agribusiness exemption. I think right now that exemption is only for transporting livestock, but there's efforts to get that expanded to other agribusiness products, moving commodities, moving inputs. Farm Bureau, I believe, is introducing an exemption. So if there's something done on the federal side, we would correspond with that on the state side. So that's really kind of what we're looking on the legislative side. But there's a lot of other issues going on that impact your business politically. I hope you're all aware we are facing an onslaught potential of county ballot measures. Lincoln County passed an aerial pesticide application ban by 61 votes in May. OFS and other groups have worked with a local voter and a timber operation in the county that have challenged that ballot measure because of preemption. They have had the court date to try to get that provision, that ordinance thrown out. And we are awaiting the decision from the courts. However, no matter what the decision is, we're expecting that decision to be appealed to the Court of Appeals. In Lane County, signatures have been turned in to place a aerial herbicide ban on the ballot in May. It's been determined, though, by the county clerk that that measure doesn't meet the requirements of the county and of the state to be placed on the ballot and have not given it a ballot title. So it is not going forward. However, that decision by the clerk has been appealed to the court or challenged to the court. There is a local resident who has appealed or tried to intervene on kind of on our behalf of that decision in that case. So we'll be having a court determine if that measure can be on the ballot in May or in November in Lane County. And I would just add, we're hearing a lot of rumbling in Clatsop County and in Yamhill County around community rights, agriculture, forestry, and are watching for potential measures in those counties. We're really seeing, as we've been able to hold these issues at the legislature, activist groups taking them more to the local level, to the voters, to determine what all you can, what type of practices you all can use on your operations. Our OSHA right now has draft rules out around worker protection standards. About 2 years ago, the Obama administration changed the worker protection standards on the federal level. The first change we'd seen in over 20 years, pretty significant. Instead of the Department of Ag, this is an area around pesticides that our OSHA oversees. And they did their rulemaking to coincide with the federal, but left two areas kind of open for additional work. And that was around the application exclusion zone. Currently under the federal rules, there is kind of a moving buffer area around your application equipment where workers or residents cannot be in that space. That caused an issue for air blast sprayers who had a 100-foot buffer around their equipment and also on-farm housing. In the Hood River area, a lot of that application takes place at night or early in the morning where workers might still be in their housing, and it's taking place in times that workers are there. So our OSHA set up a work group, tried to work with the industry around a shelter-in-place concept that would allow workers to stay in the areas while that application took place and not have to actually leave their housing during the application and then come back when it was over. Unfortunately, in those discussions, our OSHA has also added another level that for products that require a respirator, they're placing or attempting to place a 150-foot buffer or AEZ, application exclusion zone, on those products. So expanding products that require a respirator from 100 to 150 feet. Those rules are out for comment right now. I think they've had an extension to the comment deadline into January. If you're interested, and I would urge you to comment on that, we have information on our website at ofsonline.org. And because nothing good, I think, comes from California, we are watching heavily what's happening in California. And I think it's also something that we have a lot of vulnerability here in Oregon around a multitude of environmental laws. But as we see the Trump administration start to ease regulatory issues on agriculture and forestry and business, we're seeing legislatures and other state agencies respond in a more protectionism response. So if Trump administration is going to loosen something, we're going to be well beyond where they're going to go. So in California, they're doing that around chlorpyrifos. Chlorpyrifos was a product that's been heavily litigated through several reviews by EPA, has a long history of attack. And finally, last January, that was all settled. The EPA administration said, we're not going to revoke the tolerances on chlorpyrifos. We're going to come back and review it in the normal product review time period. What California has done is they are doing their own risk assessment through their Office of Pesticides on the product. But in the interim, they have placed some interim guidelines on the use of chlorpyrifos. And I'll just say common name, Lorspan. So product that's used heavily in your industry. And that is a 150-foot buffer for ground applications around sensitive sites. And the definition of sensitive sites includes residential yards. So that would mean probably anywhere that you would have a home near your property, you'd have a 150-foot buffer, not around from the home site, from the yard. And those rules are in place, those guidelines are in place in California right now while they work through the risk assessment. It's a big concern. It's one we're very concerned about, overreaction with our governor's office around the product, and are doing some outreach with Department of Ag to try to prohibit or prevent that type of reaction coming here. But on the federal level, we've seen legislation introduced in both the House and the Senate that we have quite a few of our congressional delegations signed on to full out ban the product on the federal side. That legislation is not going to go anywhere, but it's showing just an example of how folks are overreacting to having good policies in place. The other item that came out in the past 2 weeks in California is buffers around schools. California has implemented buffers starting in January around schools. It's a prohibition for a quarter mile of applying during school hours. So between the hours of, I think it's from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Application ban for air blast and aerial. In addition, if you're within that distance, you also have to report annually all the products you're going to use. So that would mean an annual per report. You might not know what you're going to plant fully that year, but you're going to have to notify the school all the products you're going to use. So when we're looking at potential risks to the industry, it's important to see what's going on in other states. And as somebody who might have some fields a quarter mile from a school, this is one that I take personal interest in. So I want to end on a positive note. You know, we have quite a few challenging industries or issues that we're dealing with in the industry, and it's really a time that folks need to step up, engage, and tell our story. And there's a new program that has their first class to really do that education piece and develop leaders who are willing to engage with our elected officials, be the new board members on our boards and commissions, maybe even potentially run for office someday. And they had their first session this November. Great, outstanding group of leaders, several with connections to this group. And there'll be the next class. Applications for the next class will be out in April. And I would encourage folks who are interested to apply or try to solicit other people to apply as well. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions or let you all go have some lunch.